Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. If you have just joined us, welcome to Radio Islam International and welcome to our program Family Health Matters. I'm your host, Sister Zeenat. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. We commence this afternoon with health news, and today we will be looking at how to maintain a healthy brain, and we're going to be looking at brain foods to improve and stimulate brain function, what to avoid, supplements, some ideas to improve your brain and your life, inshallah. So that's what we're going to be looking at during the health news slot. That will be followed by The Growing Child, and our guest today, as usual, is our regular guest, Sister Fatima Dawood, our community nursing sister. Alhamdulillah, today we look at common conditions in newborns, and we're going to be looking at a whole host of things, but we'll start off by looking at a few. I'll just go through them to give you an idea as to what we want to talk about. Obviously, we're not going to be able to do all of them, but we're going to do a few of them and inshallah continue in our next program. We're going to be looking at abdominal distension, birth injuries, blue babies. Many of our babies are born blue. Coughing. Why do little babies cough? Excessive crying. And we're going to be looking at forceps marks. So those are the ones that we want to hopefully, cover today. And then we also, in, the subsequent programs, we'll be looking at jaundice, lethargy and sleepiness and respiratory distress. All of this deals with some of the common conditions in newborns, inshallah. So before we start off with that, of course, we're going to do health news. And today, like I said, we're focusing on maintaining a healthy brain, alhamdulillah. Now, the brain is such an important organ in our bodies, but unfortunately, many of us take our brains for granted until something happens to make us realize how wonderful it is to have this incredible cognitive function. Now, what also happens is as we age, the brain dulls a little bit, and age-related memory decline is not uncommon. So we do start forgetting a little as we grow older. But even young people need to have optimal cognitive function in order to study for exams, also to get ahead in life. But whatever your age, it's useful to know what foods are most beneficial for the brain and what is best to avoid. So the food that we eat is something that is so important in our, for our brains to function optimally. Now, they say brain food is found in various places, and let's start off. Sunshine is one interesting source. So your brain actually needs a lot of sunshine. That is the vitamin D3 your body forms when you are in the sun, contributes to better memory and an improved mood. So it does affect your mood. And, we don't think of it, but really if you sit down and after listening to this program and you sit down and you realize how important it is for your brain to, function at its best, the food that we eat actually will determine how best your brain functions. Quite apart from the health benefits raised, vitamin D3 levels offer. Fresh air is also important. A stale, stuffy environment leads to stale and stuffy brain function. But if you get outdoors or you get into a well-ventilated room, and you'll experience a significant change for the better. So if you sometimes feel so groggy and so miserable, just, get up and go out and take a walk in the fresh air and see how different you feel. You just suddenly, even your mood changes. We don't realize, but all of this plays an important role. Exercise, of course, is also very important. Fresh air, mental gymnastics, you do those exercises that you're actually supposed to do for your brain. Things like crosswords, etc., all of those things are important. And they keep your brain active, and it helps your brain to maintain, to be healthy, alhamdulillah. Now, where actual nutrition is concerned, nothing beats fresh wholesome food for stimulating and improving your brain function. Doesn't fresh food, you know, help with everything in your body? Anything, you know, if you want to be a have a healthy body, then you need to eat healthy. So, you know, it's not only your brain that needs it, but your whole body, every part of your body needs that fresh food and fresh vegetables. For everything fresh instead of all the things that we these days just go out and buy. Now let's look at some brain food. Fresh cold water fish, number one, has to be the most popular of all brain foods because of the DHA it contains. This is not only needed by adults, but it also helps to develop a baby's brain. And there have been over 3,000 studies on the enormous benefits of fish oil for the human body, not least of which is the impact these oils have on the brain. So fish oil is actually, you know, they talk about fish oil, but it's actually very, very good for your brain. And you get that all in supplements too. We'll talk about supplements in a little while. Then, of course, eggs. Now, eggs have been shown to be an outstanding brain food due to the choline in the yolk. They also contribute a superb amount of protein, without which we cannot function optimally. The outdated theory that eggs raise cholesterol or heart problems has been thoroughly debunked by many new studies, and of course it won't hurt to have an egg a day. And more if you need to. Also, children especially will benefit from eating eggs regularly. And they say actually for breakfast, if a child can only have one boiled egg, it will be sufficient for their breakfast. So, you know, our children have started school now, and we want them to be at their best at school. So, you know, this is one of the ways that you can actually make sure that your children, their brains are functioning optimally is by giving them that good breakfast early in the morning. And eggs, and especially a boiled egg, is actually very good for children. Then animal protein, and we're talking about our meats, is important for brain function as well. However, try to ensure that you eat organic protein to avoid pesticides, antibiotics, growth promoters, and steroids. Good organic animal protein will give your brain a boost nothing else can. Animal protein is the best source of vitamin B12, without which our cognitive function seriously declines. Apart from all the other problems caused by vitamin B12 deficiency, the brain relies heavily on B vitamins, in particular B12. So for your brain to function good, you should try and get in your vitamin B12. Then we look at nuts and seeds. They are wonderful lubricators of the brain. Eat the seeds rather than the oils. This is the most natural way to obtain healthy fiber, minerals, oils, and other nutrients, as the oils are extremely unstable once pressed and go rancid very quickly. Now, nuts and seeds should be eaten in its raw state. And why? Because sometimes what happens is, you know, when you say roasted nuts, by the time roasted nuts or fried nuts for that matter, that, you know, the oils that you use is sometimes not good for them. And of course the nuts that are roasted, they are subjected to very high heat, and in fact are usually, you know, sometimes they are even deep fried. They say many of these roasted nuts are actually deep fried, and they are used, you don't know what kind of oils that they use. And what happens is that all the goodness of it is then obviously gone. So it's better to have them raw. So have your nuts as is instead of either fried or roasted nuts. Now they say in general, brightly colored fruit and vegetable advertise their potent their antioxidant benefits to us. So what we should do is eat a variety of colors every day. These antioxidants are powerful brain boosters, enhancing memory, preventing oxidation of the brain, and generally improving the mood. So again, many of us want to know why we are so moody. Sometimes you just look at your children. If they are hungry, how do they behave? They they just drive you crazy because they are so motivated. So much so that when you do give them the food, even that food, they wouldn't want to eat the food because they are already, you know, they're so angry and their moods are not good. And so the best thing is to make sure that your children get food on time. Don't wait for them to be so hungry before you start feeding them. So just watch your children when they are angry. Because I know of many children, the only time they really miserable is when they don't, when they are hungry. Now, they say green foods such as watercress are high in folic acid, known to help boost brain power, and it's best not to exceed 2 portions of fruit a day. Actually, they say 2 fruits is enough per day. I'm not quite sure why. But they say eat fruit after meals to avoid the sugar insulin spike, and really get down to eating a lot of brightly colored vegetables. I think that's what many of us don't really like to do, but we should try and get in as much vegetables as we can. Now, one exception to the fruit rule above that I just mentioned now is the blueberries. They are an amazing food with powerful antioxidant benefits, and anything that has a GI as low as this fruit does plus powerful antioxidants will be especially beneficial to the brain. The phytonutrient levels of blueberries are particularly high. So blueberries actually are very, very good for the brain. And then green foods such as lettuce, spinach, kale and watercress are full of chlorophyll, folic acid and powerful protective antioxidant nutrients. They are bursting with goodness that can only stimulate brain activity once again. So, you know, try and get a lot of green foods in. Green tea, they also mention green tea. They say this prevents brain oxidation, a major cause of depression, and as such is a recognized brain food. Green tea offers many other important benefits, so it will do more than improve mood and memory. So if you're a bit of a moody person, try drinking green tea. I'm sure, inshallah, it will be of benefit to you. Black tea also has been shown to enhance the mood. That's something new, Sister Fatima. Yeah. So the next time we're all feeling moody, I think we'll just go for the green tea or a cup of black tea. Maybe that, inshallah, will enhance our mood. Then water, very, very, very important, is something, and I think we mention it all the time. Every program we do on health, almost, is water is always included. It's something we need to stimulate brain activity. So it's not only for the digestive system, it's for the brain as well. Have you ever felt headachy, listless and sleepy, and then have a glass of water? Well, if so, you'll know the dramatic effect that it can have on your mood and the state of alertness. So it's, you know, water just suddenly gives you energy and gives you life after that. You feel miserable someday, you have a headache, drink a glass of water instead of running for the medicine, yes, and for the medicine chest, you know, where you can take pop up a Panado or two. Dehydration can severely interfere with the brain. And yeah, that is true. If you are dehydrated, it can really interfere with your brain. So water is an essential for proper brain function, alhamdulillah. Then eating foods as they appear in nature rather than when man has interfered with them is generally the rule of thumb. If you want the best form for of food, that's not to say you shouldn't cook food though, while still having a good quantity of raw food daily, as certain foods only release their goodness once cooked. And for example, they say tomatoes and carrots are those. And eating food both cooked and raw offers the best all-round benefit to optimize and promote good health. Now, once again, you know, when we are cooking, we should make sure that we don't overcook our vegetables. I think that's something that we've learned over the years, that, you know, rather just give it a quick steam. Your vegetables need to be crunchy when you bite into them, and they still need to retain their color. So don't boil them until there's no color left and all the nutrients are gone. So that is going to be of no use to you. Now let's look at some of the things that you should avoid. Okay, those are some of the important foods that we need to have. If we look at things to avoid, they say beware some things are notorious for interfering with brain function. I'm sure you never thought of it this way, because I didn't until after, you know, going through all this information that I have here. Stress, number one, has to be the worst. Have you ever found that you can't think straight when you are stressed? Learning to relax and to take some time, you know, some of that me time, learning to forgive readily and to live serenely with one another, greatly affects your brain will function. Be kind to those around you, be gentle with others, and be kind and gentle to yourself as well. Isn't that important? Yet, you know, that is one of the things that causes the most harm to your brain. And then also the next one is not getting enough sleep. And if I don't know if you remember my program last week where we spoke about the importance of having enough sleep. Well, not getting enough sleep is an underrated cause of cognitive decline. You need 7 to 8 hours of quality sleep at night, with at least 2 hours before midnight, if you want your brain to function effectively the next day. Unfortunately, we can't make up sleep. We need it daily, just like we need air. So, you know, no matter what, if you've missed that sleep at night, you can never make it up during the day. Even if you try, it's not going to be the same as that sleep that you had at night. And if you remember correctly, last week I mentioned one thing, that we normally do put an alarm to get up in the morning. So what we should do is to put an alarm to make sure we realize, okay, it's time, sleeping time. So when that alarm goes off, we need to put, you know, just put away everything we're doing and get ready for bed immediately. That's the only way we can get ourselves back into having a good night's sleep, you know, because what we tend to do sometimes is sit in front of the TV and waste our time, and many people just can't sleep. You know, they don't want to sleep. They're sleepy, they're tired, but they just don't want to get down to sleeping. You know, we're all like that. We find something else to do, and before you know it, it's so late that you can't even sleep properly. So please remember that. Another one is hydrogenated oils and trans fat. These are some things that you need to avoid. They contribute to the oxidation or rusting of the brain. They are found in vegetable oils, margarines, pastries, all those lovely things that we have, processed and refined foods. Always read labels. And if you see these words, put the product straight back on the supermarket shelf. If you prepare fresh food daily and only eat real food, you won't encounter these damaged fats, which damage the brain. In fact, junk food in general tends to lead to low-level depression and, of course, oxidation of brain tissue. Then, of course, your sugar intake, also very important. This is a huge one. Virtually everyone living in modern society either has a high sugar diet or fights against it constantly. Everything you see these days has sugar added to it. So, you know, even if you look at the drinks that we have, even if they talk about those diet drinks and all that, everything has sugar. But if you really have a sweet tooth, then try stevia or xylitol instead. They are harmless and they are tasty. So if you really must, okay? Supplements, yes, you need to supplement, because sometimes no matter how much you eat, how much of the right food you think you have taken in, you still need some. It can never be enough, so you do need supplements, and it's very important for you to always consult with your medical practitioner before going and getting these supplements. It's very vital for brain health too, and some of the good ones include, I'll just go through them, it's fish oil, choline, rhodiola, some acid, it's known as GABA. These all can be very valuable. It has its, you know, I can't go through all of them because right now it's almost time for me to end the program. But just some ideas to improve your brain and your life. And I'd like to end with that. It's important to eat small meals often so that your blood sugar levels don't swing too widely, causing foggy brain symptoms. Make sure you include protein with carbohydrates to prevent a sugar rush. Then the second one is actively avoid choosing refined foods over a healthy option at a restaurant. So you can eat healthy even if you're going out, but just look at the menu and choose correctly. Develop close, deep relationships with people who matter to you. This has an amazingly positive effect on your brain activity. Then let go of those things that hold you captive, that hold you back. Things like your past hurts, regrets, resentments, etc. And forgive readily. These are things that Islam teaches us. It's not for somebody to teach us this now. We're supposed to be knowing all of these. Someone once said that when you mix poison for your enemies, you end up drinking it yourself. Let it go, forgive, and move on in peace. That's my advice to all of you out there, and myself, of course. Learn to foster a positive outlook. One has to train oneself to do this. You know, it's so important to be positive, but like we all know, it is difficult if you are not a positive person. But sometimes, it's not sometimes, but all the time, it's important for you to train yourself to do this. You must, you know, decide that I'm going to do it and work on it all the time. Pray often and develop an attitude of gratitude. Being thankful brings enormous peace and calm into our lives, offsetting the negative effects of stress on the brain. And we can't have it any better. We have to do it 5 times a day. You know, Allah has commanded us to take care of our body. 5 times a day, you forget the whole world and everything around you, and you sit on that musalla and you read your salah. What else do we need? And finally, do something for someone else. This is stimulating for you, not only emotionally, but also cognitively. So do for others. Do for somebody else. You feel good about it. And the moment you feel good, your brain becomes healthier. Alhamdulillah. Well, listeners, that's where I left you. And I hope this will be of some help to you, inshallah. When we return, it's time for the growing child. Our guest, Sister Fatima Dawood, our community nursing sister, is with me in the studio. And today we look at common conditions in newborns. Stay tuned.
Popular community nurse Sister Fatima Dawood will be joining Sister Zenith every alternate Wednesday to talk about health, development and the wellness of mums and babies. Be sure to tune in to learn all about being the best new mom you can be, only on Radio Islam.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to the program, The Growing Child. I'm your sister Zenith. My guest is Sister Fatima Dawood, our community nursing sister. And yes, it's been a long time for us to do this program again. Well, assalamu alaikum to Sister Fatima. Jazakallahu khair once again for joining us in this new year.
Wa alaikum salam.
Okay. Today we're going to be talking about common conditions in newborns. Now, some physical conditions are especially common during the first couple of weeks after birth. If you notice any of, some of these conditions that we will be mentioning today in your baby, then firstly and most importantly is for you to contact your doctor, or, you know, take your baby to the doctor or the pediatrician. I think it's so important that we don't take things for granted, especially if you're a new mom. You know, if you see anything that is not, you're not happy with, then the best thing for you to do is to consult your doctor. Now, some of the things that we want to talk about is abdominal distension, and that's just basically, you know, those little bellies that normally stick out. So it's sometimes very worrying to parents when you suddenly see this and you don't know what in the world is happening to your little baby. Then we look at birth injuries, because you come back from the hospital and you notice, that's when you sit down and you look at your baby, you know, you really scrutinize everything about your baby, and suddenly you notice all these injuries on the baby, and it really can be very worrying. Then also your baby sometimes turns blue. Now it is common sometimes for babies to turn blue, but when is the blue okay and when not? Then also a baby coughs. We know that is normal, but you know, if it's a bit too much, then you do worry about that as well. We're also hopefully going to look at excessive crying, forceps marks, and then inshallah, there's other things like jaundice that we also want to look at, lethargy and sleeplessness. It's, you know, sometimes we're not very sure what the difference is between a lethargic baby and just a baby that's sleeping, and also respiratory distress. But I'm sure we're not going to do all of that today. So let's start off with the first one. Sister Fatima, what I want to know is, they talk about abdominal distension. Now, just quickly, it's about those bellies that normally stick out. So why do babies, especially newborns, sometimes present with their belly sticking out like that? What is the cause of that?
Zina, it could be two things. Sometimes it's the navel, that the navel, it hasn't been cut properly, it hasn't been treated properly at birth. It actually protrudes through the abdomen, and that causes a distension as well. But if you talk about abdominal distension, it means the whole bottom area, the tummy area, extends. Now, with the newborn, it is normal to have a bigger belly than the top. This is it's just that they are deformed like that when they're born. It's not an abnormality. It's quite normal for the baby to be small on top and a little belly. And as they grow, they form. And then they form normal, where the body, the head, the abdomen, the legs are all in equilibrium. So it means that that's a normal thing. But if that belly is a problem, then you have to take heed. Now, when do you take heed? Is when the baby cries a lot and you find that the abdomen has been distended. You feel it and you feel it hard. It could be two things, that the feeding could be a problem, or the baby could be constipated. But normally babies do not get constipated. What happens here is, if they're not feeding too well and they're not getting sufficient food, then that causes a bit of heart stool, and that can cause pain.
Mm-hmm. So one shouldn't actually be concerned about it, but you need to take note of how it feels, rather.
Yeah. Not that you should be concerned. It is normal for the abnormal little abdomen bigger than the top. That's when they're born. But like I said, if it gives you a problem, if the child is crying, and if you touch the abdomen, the child cries, then there's something wrong there. It could be distension. It could be fecal matter that has been, stale, where the baby's tummy is not working too well. Why does a baby's tummy not work well? Because the baby's not feeding enough.
Mm-hmm. And yes, I think that would be a very good sign, or rather a symptom, when you see your baby, when a newborn baby, especially if their tummy don't work, that would definitely be of concern. Because what happens is, for all that for all that to come out, the baby's tummies normally work a lot, and you see all that black stool kind of thing coming out all the time, and that's very important actually to happen.
Now there is where the breast milk comes in. With a baby that's breastfed, they demand feed. They feed after, when they're born, they can feed after every half an hour, every hour, every 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. Depends entirely on the amount of milk the mother's producing. At the beginning, of course, they feed more often on demand because the milk hasn't been established yet. Once the milk establishes, then they suck and they can sleep for hours. But if the baby's had enough, now if you look at the breastfed baby, obviously it's a contented baby. They suck very well. They get up when they're hungry. Their color's good. They sleep well. They cry well. You know, they cry at their time, but babies should cry.
It's important.
And sometimes they want to hear themselves as well, then they know they are there. And these are all the important things that you look at. So a contented baby is a breastfed baby that's had enough. But if the milk is not sufficient, then the baby is going to cry. But it's not going to give a distended abdomen. A distended abdomen is either abnormal or not. In the newborn, it is quite normal to have a bigger belly than the body, like I said. But if it is hard, and if you touch it and the baby cries, then there's something wrong. We should check it out.
Have it seen to immediately. Okay, now, you mentioned something about the belly button earlier. You know, when the belly button is sometimes out, I remember a little one having a belly that was showing out like that. Not the button, rather, the belly button showing out like that. And when it was, the baby was actually diagnosed with a hernia.
That's right.
So can that also be a hernia at that, you know, early stage? Is it very painful?
Hernia is very painful. And that's what you should look for. Now, if there's a distension, or there's like a, like you say, the belly button is sticking out, that is the umbilical cord. Now, when the umbilical cord is cut, what it does, it dries off. That's why you don't do anything to it. You leave it alone, and it dries off, and it falls off, and leaves a very small scar, which we call the belly button. It's got no significance in the body at all. It's not important. But you can make it important if you're going to fiddle with it. If you're going to pull at the cord, what's going to happen is the intestines can protrude through the hole, and that is when it causes a problem. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, you know, sometimes when the baby is born, you normally notice that the nurse or the doctor delivers, they put their fingers there to feel if there's an opening. If there's an opening, it's going to close. If it does not close, then it has to be seen to medically. Mm-hmm. But please do not fiddle with the button. Do not fiddle with your fingers there, because if you don't know what to do, you're going to hurt the child.
Mm-hmm. Also, something comes to mind, and I think these are just I don't think they do it so much these days, but people normally, if that little belly, you know, after the initial cord falls off, that after it dries up a little bit, people tend to put a bandage over, you know, around the navel. Some people even believe in putting a coin and things like that. Is that of any significance?
No,
really?
It's got no significance at all. It's just an old wives' tale where you put the coin on, or it must be a copper coin, it must be the penny of the old days. We haven't got it anymore, but we'll go and ask the grannies if they do have a penny to put on there.
Some people actually
keep it for that. It's not significant at all. Do not touch the belly button. Do not touch it.
Okay.
You only touch it when the baby is born, that they use a little solution just to dry it up so it can get dry and fall off. If it doesn't, it leaves a little scar. The scar must be there. But if it leaves a little bit of a bump, have it checked up. What the doctor is going to do is going to feel for the hole. If there's a hole, they're going to, you know, take note of it and call you back to check it up, because that will close up. It closes on its own. If it doesn't close on its own, of course, then we call it a hernia. So it will take a small operation just to put a stitch in there to close it up.
Okay, but it will eventually
close up on its
so
own.
So even if you have that little protruding belly button, you
leave
shouldn't
it
really worry
another
about
another thing, a very important thing is do not put a bandage around the baby's abdomen. Do not. It is like you wearing a corset. Why do we wear corsets? We wear corsets so that we can stifle our abdomen, so that we can lose weight. You're doing the same to the baby.
Not lose the weight, but stifle
them. And then that, when they want to lose weight, then they wear the tightest corset you can find. Now, this is what you're doing to your baby.
And this is
going to cause abdominal pain, and it's going to cause vomiting.
Okay. Okay, that's the abdominal distension. Now, if we look at birth injuries, it's also very common. But what are the causes of birth injuries, and what kind of injuries are we looking at?
Look, birth injuries can be caused. You can cause birth injuries. The one birth injury that you can cause is a forceps, where they do leave marks on the baby's head. But if it is used properly, it does not cause any harm.
And
it
does
leave a little mark, but it does disappear. But that is to help the baby's head through, if the passage is not big enough. Or if necessary, then they just slit. Then they cause an episiotomy, where they cut it open so that the baby's head can now slip out normally, where you don't have to use forceps or a seizure, as they call it now.
Mm-hmm.
And the other important thing is, in labor, we always tell the mothers, please breathe when you are in labor. Just breathe. Because what you're doing is, when you push down without a pain, or when you push excessively, what you do, you cause pressure on the baby's head. And that can cause brain damage, especially when the baby's been born.
Yes, so also one of the things that can happen is, you know, the head, if it sometimes looks distorted. Is this as a result of...
there's two things there. That is called a caput, and the other one is a hematoma. Now, with a caput, it's a little bump at the back of the head, the presenting part of the head. It's either the crown or slightly to the back, where the baby is being presented, where the baby is now ready to give, the mother's ready to give birth. So that part is presenting at the fore. So you're watching that part where the passage gets bigger and bigger around the head. What happens here, there's slight pressure on the head, but that prevents pressure on the brain. That is a soft bump. It's a soft tissue that forms over the head to prevent brain damage. And if you do have to push very hard, then you damage the skin around there, and that causes the hematoma, where that is now the blueness, where it will take the more longer time to heal than this other one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but you know, sometimes the head looks a little distorted, like I said earlier, but it does eventually, you know, come right again. You don't have to massage and all those things.
Please do not touch the head. I know the foot pharaoh was in our days, we used to call them the foot pharaohs, because they used to come and they deliver the babies. Unfortunately, they used to cause a lot of brain damage because they didn't know how to...
In those days,
deliver. They didn't know what was the importance of a proper delivery, what you look for, what you don't do, what you do. And babies used to be damaged. And they used to have a lot of this problem with the head. And what they used to do, they used to rub it down. You're damaging the head. You're damaging the brain, because we've got fontanelles and we've got sutures. Now, if you feel your head, it actually, you can feel the sutures on it, is where it overlapses to protect the brain during childbirth. Now, what they do is they rub that down, and I think in that time they actually touch the brain, because the bones are so soft. So that was, it is actually illegal to go to any unqualified people. Now, you know, the same thing now is that deliveries in hospital are the things that are advised, really, not anymore home deliveries, because of the problems it used to cause
in those days. But they do have, you know, home deliveries where midwives actually do come.
Supervised very well, mm-hmm. very well supervised. No, those are qualified people. They qualify. They know what they're doing. You know, you must remember something. It's not every person that has a very quick delivery. Some people take an hour, some two. They're just fortunate. Some take a whole day. Especially with the first baby, you take quite long. So you need a lot of patience. And the sabr, as we call,
alhamdulillah. Okay, we're just going to take a break. When we return, inshallah, we continue with our program. We're talking about, you know, birth injuries at the moment, but we're basically talking about some common conditions in newborns. Stay with us. We'll be back in a few moments. And remember, our lines are open. If you do have any questions or concerns, you can call us on the number 011-854-1548. That's the studio number. Or you can WhatsApp or SMS me on the number 082-84-92786. Stay tuned. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to the program, The Growing Child. I'm your host, Sister Zenit. My guest is Sister Fatima Dawood, our community nursing sister. And we're looking at common conditions in newborns today, alhamdulillah. If you have any questions or concerns, you have a few minutes. Maybe you can call in. The number to dial, 011-854-1548. And you can, if you want to, SMS us or WhatsApp me on the number 082-84-92786. Now, we're busy talking about birth injuries. Sister Fatima, collarbone injuries, is that also one of those injuries that can happen during birth?
No, normally you don't have a collarbone injury during a normal birth. But what happens is, sometimes when a baby is born, you know, with a presenting part with the shoulders, you know, the presenting part is the head. And the back of the head, where it actually lubricates the passage, and it opens up very slowly, where the head slips through, and then the one shoulder and the next shoulder. But sometimes they call it impacted shoulders, where the two shoulders come out together. And when that happens, the baby can't be born because the passage is not big enough. So what they do is, they snip it. It is a way of doing it, and please do not try doing it ever. But what they do is, you use your forefinger and your thumb, and you just snap the collarbone. And this aids the baby being born through the passage.
Uh-huh.
But that is done manually. But please do not do it if you don't know what you're doing. That the doctor does.
Okay.
Or the person who's going to deliver. The midwife is going to deliver the baby. If she feels that this is impacted shoulders, they snap the collarbone for the passage for the baby to come through.
Okay.
And but it heals very quickly.
But that means that the collarbone is slightly broken.
It breaks. It actually breaks.
Fractures,
and what happens,
what?
Yeah. Then what they do, they put the baby in the brace.
And it does heal?
It heals very fast.
Shame. Doesn't the baby go through a lot of pain?
No pain at all. There's no pain.
Alhamdulillah.
Because what they do is, you put the bone together and then you put the brace on. So there's no movement there.
Okay.
They actually mobilize
I wasn't aware of this. This is the first time I've heard about something like that. But in any case, another common injury also is muscle weakness sometimes. It's also sometimes a birth injury. They talk about that too. What exactly is meant
the
by
babies,
that?
You know, some of the babies are very big. Then they have pressure. It could be pressure on a muscle that can cause weakness of the muscle. But it also heals. It heals very well. Yeah, they do heal.
And I'm sure if it doesn't really heal very quickly, then obviously you need to go take the child for some
physio and things like that.
And it does come right up.
Comes right, yes.
Inshallah. Okay.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a permanent thing.
So
it would not be a permanent unless there's a brain damage. If the brain is damaged, then you'll have these type of things that are signs of a brain damage.
But that just shows that, you know, as soon as your baby is born, it's so important for you to, as a parent, to be so alert, you know, and aware of all these little things and make sure that all these things are in order. And if you as a mother or a father, for that matter, or parents, anybody feels that there's anything wrong with your child, it is so important for you to have the baby seen to immediately and not leave it, because so much can be done to help the injury if there is an injury. There's so much that can be done these days, you know. It's amazing what they have. You can go for physio, you can go for occupational therapy. There's so many different kinds of therapy to help the child come right again.
Isn't it, if you notice it, that in a hospital delivery, there's always a standby, either a doctor or a pediatrician or one of the nurses. But as soon as baby is born, the doctor will not leave the mother, because he's watching the mother, because for the afterbirth to come. So he's watching her for the afterbirth, for bleeding or anything like that. But he'll pass the baby on to the assistant. And if you take note of it, what we do is we're always very anxious about the mother watching her. But if you watch what that person is doing to the baby there, they're examining the baby. They examine from head to toe. You know, the eyes, the head, the muscles, the arms, the legs, the buttocks, everything.
The circumference.
The movement of the eyes, the movement of the mouth, and the stool, the meconium stool. They do all that and they're watching too. This is what they check for. Any muscle, flabby muscle, anything that happens to the baby, then they report it. So they pick it up at that time.
So
it is picked up immediately.
Mm-hmm. And a pediatrician is also always on hand.
Always on hand.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'd like to carry on, but I think for us to continue with the next one and all the other points that we have here, we'll have to to another program again, inshallah. But it's almost time for us to end the program. But Jazakallah khair, Sister Fatima, for coming in. I'd just like to remind our listeners that if you have any questions or concerns, you know, and you would like some answers, you can always contact Sister Fatima Dawood on the number 011-852-6515. She's always available, alhamdulillah, to, you know, give you whatever advice you want. So the number again, 011-852-6515, sorry. Inshallah. But Jazakallah khair, Sister Fatima, for coming in, and we will speak to you again next month, inshallah.
Inshallah.
We'll continue with this program, and we'll get more answers, inshallah.
Inshallah.
Well, listeners, that's it from us. Until next time, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.